This is Dane, and I've spoken to you before on Blind Call Tech, and I thought I'd do another segment today on Apple and their range of computers. So I'll give you my email address first. It's grtdane at dane-trethown, trethown.net. Many people have spoken about VoiceOver, both negatively and positively. Yours truly being one of them. And I thought it about time that we looked at the various Apple computers around, because it can be a little confusing for the first timer. We'll give you a few exercises along the way, a few links so you can follow up each and look at the specs. And we'll also take a brief look at what you can do to satisfy your curiosity when down at your local Apple store and Apple reseller. But first, a little history of some of the computers that have come out of Apple. You've probably best heard of the Apple II series, that is the 2 Plus, 2E, 2C, and the original Apple II. I've never actually seen an Apple II or an Apple II Plus, but I have worked with an Apple IIe, and I've never seen a 2C either, but I understand that the 2C was the portable version of a 2E. The 2E, in all respects, pretty much looked like a portable typewriter in many ways. It had the keyboard at the front and a solid box at the back and a little lid that you could take off to insert your, what were known then as expansion cards. In other words, little circuit boards like PC cards that you plugged into slots, and you ran the cables out of little panels that you could insert or take out in the rear of the box. And on top of the Apple IIe would go your accessories like your disk drives, your monitor, and so forth. Back in the glory days when we thought floppy drives were wonderful things and floppy disks really flopped. And it was a wonderful achievement in 1987 with my Apple IIe when I got a 10 megabyte hard drive. You know, I had the world at my fingertips with all the data I could store. 10 megabytes, eh? And now we're talking about 10 terabytes. And if my Apple IIe were working at the moment, I would gladly demonstrate it to you, because it has many accessibility advantages over many of the modern day PCs and even the modern day Mac, because software at that time was designed with accessibility in mind from the ground up. Unfortunately, the voice synthesizer of the Apple IIe has decided to finally die. I took it out to just sit and remember a couple of weeks ago, and turned it on and didn't hear a damn word, so that's a shame. So I'm trying to chase up another voice synthesizer for that, but we'll get to that some other time, maybe, if I can get another voice synthesizer. So we've come a long way since the days of Apple IIe's. I used another Apple Mac some time ago, going back to the 90s, mid-90s, 1995 I bought it. It was an Apple Mac LC630. And interesting machine. It changed quite a lot by then. It was a little box and the keyboard plugged into it externally, as keyboards do for most machines, and the mouse plugged into that, and it was a one-button mouse, as all Mac users will be familiar with. And the floppy drive and the CD-ROM drive were on the front of this box, and the floppy drive was an electronic thing, pretty much like the CD drives are now on the Macs, in that you just slotted the disk in and the drive would grab it. And I've still got Still got this old thing out in the shed, actually. Another thing I must drag out one day and give you a taste of what it sounds like, because we ran a screen reader at the time called Outspoken, which was quite intuitive in its interface, but you really had to know how to use it. It was a different beast from your Windows screen reader in that if a dialogue came up, for instance, you would just get the word dialogue, and you use the screen navigation keys to find out what that dialogue was. Primitive, you might say. Oh, well, maybe it was, but we can go back even further if you want to talk about primitive screen readers to some of the CBM screen readers I've used with the Votrax synthesizer and CBM and WordStar. And what you did then, you just typed and hoped for the best, and then you used screen reader commands to review your text and correct it and move your cursors around to delete characters and so forth. So every process had to be done one after the other. So there's no instant feedback, or hardly any instant feedback with what you were doing. The LC630 was the first Mac I'd ever seen that ran Mac applications and PC applications together. So you could have your favourite DOS or Windows 3.1, as it was then, applications running and press a key combination and get back into your Mac applications. And actually this was achieved by using a 486 Intel processor. It literally had two computers in the one box, and you just switch from one to the other one. Neat. And the system worked well. So here we are in the 21st century. It was quite by accident that I got my first modern day Mac computer, which was a Apple iBook. I won't go into the circumstances of how I got it, but I did get it on the 1st of April, I think it was, and I've enjoyed using my Macs ever since. The iBook is the forerunner to the modern-day MacBook notebook computer, and it ran on a PowerPC G4 chip. The modern-day Apple computers have switched to Intel, and that gives us quite a few advantages, one of which, of course, is that you can use Windows systems, XP, Vista, and so forth. And many people have touched on that, so I don't know whether it's an appropriate place really to mention it again, unless anyone has any particular desire for me to run through it. I'll briefly tell you that I don't use Bootcamp with my Mac. Bootcamp is the software that Apple gives you with Leopard. That's the operating system that Macs use now. And Bootcamp allows you to run Windows as a separate process. So in other words, when you're booting the computer, you hold down one of the keys on the keyboard and the Mac boots into Windows. When you start the computer and you leave it alone, the computer boots into native Leopard mode, and that's all very nice, but if you're doing a lot of switching about between Windows and Mac, and this is very handy, I think, for people who are learning Macs and they want to get back to Windows, to something they're familiar with, to complete urgent tasks or whatever, then it's Bootcamp is hardly practical. So I use something called Fusion, which allows me to use a virtual Windows machine in the Mac environment. Very similar to what I described earlier with my Mac LC630, where I could switch between systems. So if someone would like me to talk about that at some other time, that's fine, just email me and let me know. But it has been well covered by other people, so I didn't really want to sound like a parrot and repeat everything that had been documented. Alright, so we're with the modern day Mac now, and I have already mentioned one of them, which is the MacBook. That is the notebook line of computer, and that is the one that I'm talking to you on now. And that's the one I'm going to describe today. And after I've described it, I'm going to mention the other Mac computers which are around and give you links to them so you can go and have a look at them. And in a follow-up podcast, I'm going to talk about my iMac, which is a different beast altogether, and I'll give you a brief overview of what an iMac is following this. Talk about the MacBook. So I have the MacBook on my knee now, and I'm talking to you on it, as you can hear. It has the built-in microphone in the screen on the top edge, and I'm using IDAC Audio Hijack Pro to record this segment. The MacBook is extremely thin. When folded down with the screen on top of it, it would be just under half an inch thick. And it was quite a surprise to me when I saw it. I don't know how the hell they put a DVD drive and a hard drive into that thing, but they do. And it's somewhat thinner than the iBook I was used to. On the left-hand side of the Mac, you have your ports, and they, in order from front to back, are the Kensington security lock. That's some sort of locking system that enables you to lock the MacBook to a desk. Then the headphone line-out socket and the microphone line-in socket. Two very interesting sockets indeed, because they not only allow you to connect analog devices such as headphones or a patch cord to a audio system or audio speakers in the case of the output, and microphones and line-in devices in the case of the input, but they also allow digital connections through a Toslink cable. Sony had been using this sort of arrangement for 13 years now, I think it would be, ever since I bought my first mini disc player. And it does actually work. I connected one of these cables from the output of the Mac to the digital input of my surround sound system and played a DVD on the MacBook in full surround sound. So it's amazing what you can get out of the digital output, and conversely amazing what you can put in through the digital input. So that would be worth looking at if you were considering doing audio work. All present day Macs come with this input-output arrangement. The next two ports behind them are the two USB 2.0 ports. Behind that is the FireWire 400 port, a different data standard again. It's very widely used for hard drives and, I believe, movie and video cameras. It also has an interesting use too. If you have a external drive that you can connect to it, you can have your MacBook or any other modern day Mac computer act as a time machine backup system. So all you need to do is connect your hard drive, and Leopard will ask you and prompt you and say, do you wish to use this drive as a time machine backup drive? And if you respond yes, then your computer automatically backs itself up at predetermined times, which you can set through Leopard. Behind the FireWire port is the video out port for the connection of a display. Behind that is the Ethernet 1GB port, and this port supports three different standards of connection: 10 Mbps, 100 Mbps, and 1000 Mbps, hence the name Gigabyte. And that, of course, is for connection to a local area network or LAN. And the last port on the left-hand side, and it's probably the most interesting port, is the power adapter port. And you might be saying, well, what's so interesting about that? Power adapters plug into that port. We know about that. However, it has been completely redesigned, and it is a magnetic port. So suppose, for instance, you're walking along and you inadvertently leave the cord over the floor and someone trips over the cord and the plug just falls out, causing no damage whatsoever to the power port. Now, having deliberately done that, as you would have heard then, I've now got to find the plug. Where are we? There we are. And I've got the plug now, and I'm drawing it close to the power port, and I can feel the magnetic pull of the plug towards the port, and I let it go, and it just snaps back into place again. And the power, AC power, is now connected to the machine, and the battery is once again charging. So it's one of those ideas you think to yourself, yeah, it's taken them ages to develop that, and they could use it for so many other things. Like, I have a pair of very nice Sennheiser headphones here where the cords plug into the elements themselves, or the phones themselves. And the big problem I had with that is that you might stand up and inadvertently stand on the cord, and of course the plugs get pulled out of the phones, and that can damage the phones, as it has happened in one case here, and they cost a hell of a lot to replace, around about $150. So, you know, I just wish that Sennheiser would completely redesign those things, and if they did, I'd buy a new pair. Alright, so they're the ports on the left-hand side of the computer. And just summarising them again, audio in and out, analog and digital, two USB 2.0 ports, one Firewire 400 port, a display output port, Ethernet, gigabyte port, and your power adapter port. On the right-hand side, we have the slot for the DVD drive. This model of MacBook I purchased has the DVD super drive in it. In other words, it can not only read DVD formats, but it can write them. The MacBook is available in several models. Mine's the second from the bottom. The bottom model only has the DVD drive that allows the reading of DVDs and writing to CD, rather than other DVD formats. Now, that's a question you're going to have to look at if you buy one of these things. Are you going to bother writing DVDs with it, or are you going to transfer your data to your main system and write the DVDs there? And that approach has some merit, because you can save quite a bit of money on your MacBook purchase. And if you really wanted to write to DVD with it, well, you could use an external Firewire DVD burner anyway, or a USB one. I think they make them for both now. So that's covered both sides. The screen, as I told you, on the top edge has the built-in microphone into it. It's a glossy screen and very, very bright. I'm told that you can see it from quite some distance away. Next to the built-in microphone is the built-in EyeSight camera. And you can use this with Skype or iChat. iChat is the Mac's chat program, which is compatible with various chat standards, including AIM. And I believe the camera's resolution is quite good. That's really all I can say about it. Obviously, I haven't seen the sort of results it produces, and I'm not likely to see them either. So, going to the top of the computer, assuming that it's unfolded, I'm resting my hands on the keyboard. And Apple have completely redesigned the keyboard. It looks a lot like a very, very large telephone keypad. Well, obviously it's a lot larger than a telephone keypad, but the buttons remind me of it. They're big and square, like the sort you'd find on telephones. However, it is a proper QWERTY keyboard, and very, very nice to type on. As I said, the keys are large and pleasant for the fingers. So if you've got rather large fingers, you're not going to miss the keys and not going to miss type anything at all. Very, very quiet keyboard too. as I'll demonstrate to you by launching an application here on the Mac, and I will do some typing. So I'll go into the Mac's dock, which is a sort of cross between a desktop and a taskbar that you organize and put all your applications in.
Audio Hijack Pro running.
And I will navigate to the program text edit.
Dashboard, dictionary, disk utility, Vision, iTunes, Mail running, QuickTime Player, Real Player, Safari, Skype running, System Preferences, Text Edit.
Okay, and I press the return here.
Audio Hot, Text Edit, Window Untitled, Edit Text Blank.
Okay, so let's just type a simple sentence, and VoiceOver can do the echoing of what I'm typing, word by word for you.
Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of the party. New line.
There we are. Simple sentence, just to demonstrate the keyboard to you. And that was VoiceOver's Alex, which was doing the speaking for us. That's one of the new treats with Leopard. Although, then again, I really think that if you're serious about voice, you might like to invest in the InfoVox voices, Lucy and Graham and so forth, which are the best software voices you're ever likely to hear. And note too, that if you go and get a demo of a Mac and have Alex read something to you, how he breathes while he reads, etc. Well, I breathe while I speak and read too. And we'll talk more about putting Macs into demo modes very, very shortly. So that's the keyboard of the Mac, as well as the typing keys. It has the function keys across the stop and the top, and the escape key on the left, of course. And you have 12 function keys plus the eject key. That can be used to eject disks in the drive, of course, or other devices if they are selected. The Macs work differently to PCs in that if you have an external drive connected or another volume, you disconnect them by ejecting them, which to me makes more sense rather than diving into the system tray and looking for the safely remove hardware icon and fiddling around with that to be sure that you don't cause corruption on your external device before you remove it. And it took me a while to find this out about the eject device mechanism until I created errors on a whole heap of hard drives and things, and then someone told me, no, you're doing the wrong thing. So different approaches, different ways of doing things. Now, on the bottom left of the keyboard, we have four keys. The first one is the FN key, and this key is very, very important because when pressed down, it puts the function keys into different modes, or it can do, depending on how you have the system selected, set up. Sorry, when you're normally running the system, if you use the function keys without pressing the FN key, they control various hardware aspects of the MacBook, which include the audio volume, the brightness of the display, mirror display mode, which is some mode where you can have an external display connected and look at your laptop display and glance from one to the other at the same time. I think you can also take it to the point where you can have a presentation displayed on one display and something displayed on another one. So that's what happens when you use the function keys without the FN key pressed. But with the FN key pressed, the function keys revert to their normal activity. Say F1, F1, F2, F2 for your applications, that sort of thing. And you, as I said, you can reverse those settings and set them the other way around so that when the FN keys held down, the function keys control various aspects of the MacBook, as in brightness, volume, and that sort of thing. So that's up to you to set it the way you want it. And of course the FN key provides us with other functionality with some of the keys on the keyboard. For instance, if you hold the FN key down, the right side of the keyboard becomes a number pad for entering numbers, if you would find that more convenient. And you can extend that by turning them into mouse movement commands. So we won't go into all that right now, but that's very handy to know, particularly if you're going to use VoiceOver and move the mouse around or use some of VoiceOver's extended navigation facilities. Okay, the FN key I talked about. Then to the right of that is the control key. Then to the right of that is the option key. And to the right of that is the command key. And the option key can be thought of as an alt key for the PC. The command key is also another modifier key similar to the control key. To the right of those we have the space bar, which is immediately obvious. To the right of that we have another command key, and to the right of that again we have an enter key. Now the enter key is distinct from the return key. Once again, the same applies with the PC. So if you can think of the enter key on the MacBook as the enter key on the number pad of the PC. Again, I won't go into the actual differences. Normally the enter key and the return key act in the same way, but they can be made to behave differently depending on the applications that you're using. The keyboard has two shift keys, of course, left and right, and a caps lock key and a tab key, as you would expect. The keyboard is indented slightly into the top of the computer, an interesting design. So what this effectively means is that you have plenty of places to rest your hands while you're typing, so you're not straining on the keys, because in front of the keyboard there are two pieces of plastic which form the front of the computer, so the computer's set back from the front. And you can rest your hands on that while you reach around with your fingers on the keyboard to the various keys that you wish to type. And in the middle of these two rests on the front is the mouse trackpad. And it's a touch-sensitive thing that is dependent on the amount of fingers that you put on it as to what functions it performs for scrolling and things like that. And below the scroll pad, if you like, it has the big mouse click button underneath that. So that's an overview of what the MacBook looks like. Oh, I meant to mention the speakers. They're actually in the back of the computer, and there are slots at each side on the back of the computer for each of the two speakers. And of course, the sound travels from those slots up through the gap between the screen and the top of the computer when you have the computer open. According to the spec sheet, there are actually three speakers in the Mac. One must be some sort of subwoofer or something, perhaps. It doesn't detail that, but I know there are definitely two stereo speakers there, and the sound quality out of them is quite nice. So let's give you a few links so you can go and investigate. Since I've talked about the MacBook, I'd best give you the link for that, and that's http://www.apple.com/MacBook, MacBook. So I'll repeat that, www.apple.com/MacBook. There are two kinds of MacBook, the MacBook and the MacBook Pro. Now perhaps someone with a MacBook Pro might like to do a little segment for Blind Cool Tech about the MacBook Pro, because I don't know too much about them. I chose the MacBook because it seemed to me it really wasn't going to give me much benefit in performance over the MacBook Pro anyway, and I wanted a laptop, notebook computer, and the MacBook would suggest from its specs that it would do more than I ever would want to do anyway with a laptop. And the other reason I got it was because that I sold my iBook, so I had to get a replacement for it. And so here we are with this MacBook, and certainly it's a worthwhile laptop considering, even if you're just going to use it to run Windows. My laptop has the 80 gig drive in it, but of course you can extend that by buying external drives. I know Apple, for instance, have, I think it's an Amiga drive, I think it's a 100 gig thing that just plugs into the FireWire port of the computer and it's self-powered, and I think they're selling that for around about $120, so that's cheap and nifty, so you can carry it around in your MacBook case or laptop case. I have a case for mine and it has more pockets in it than a woman's handbag, so that's saying something. Okay, getting back to these links, that was the MacBook link I just gave you, and for reference, because we'll be talking about the iMac next time, the link for the iMac is www.apple.com/iMac, I-M-A-C. That is a desktop computer. And for the Mac Pro, which is the professional Mac, the link is http://www.apple.com/Mac Pro. That's the professional desktop unit. I've not seen one yet, so again, if anyone owns one, they might like to do a segment on Blind Cool Tech about them. I believe they're an astonishing computer in that they have 8 processors in them. The Mac book computers run a Intel Duo Core processor. And the last computer of the Mac range, which is the baby, is the Mac Mini. That is approximately the size of a dual CD case. And again, someone might like to do an article on the Mac Mini for Blind Cool Tech. I have an old PowerPC version, but I intend to get the new Intel version. And the link for that is www.apple.com/Mac Mini. M-A-C-M-I-N-I. So I'll look at the iMac in the next segment, but before I go, some very simple things to do if you wish to hear voiceover for yourself down at your local friendly and hopefully not too crowded Apple store. You are presented with the MacBook and you can feel the keyboard in front of you. So, assuming the system is booted up, you press the FN key at the bottom of the keyboard, as I explained earlier, with your little finger. Then hold the Command key down with your thumb and look for F5 on the top row. And don't forget that the key on the left is the Escape key. So you count in from that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And press that combination. So I'll just turn voiceover off first so that we get the proper effect.
Voiceover off.
So I'll repeat the process again. Hold the FN key down with the little finger of the left hand and hold the Command key down, perhaps not with the thumb, as I said. What's the finger in from the thumb? Is that what they call the index finger? And then look for F5 on the keyboard. Don't count the escape key, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and press the key combination.
Voiceover on, text edit.
Okay, window off we go.
Untitled. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of the party.
And to edit silence text. Voice, you press the control key. So, have fun with that, and I look forward to my next segment. So this is Danger Thown, who has to toggle back to Audio Hijack Pro.
Audio Hijack
to stop this
Pro.
Podcast. And I'll give you my email address again before I go. It's grtdane@dane, D-A-N-E, Trethowan, TRETHOWAN.net. Thanks for listening.